Chapter 41. The figure descended the great stairs, steadily, steadily, always verging, like a weight in deep water, to the black gulf at the bottom. Mr. Gradgrind, apprised of his wife's decease, made an expedition from London, and buried her in a businesslike manner. He then returned with promptitude to the National Cinder Heap, and resumed his sifting for the odds and ends he wanted, and his throwing of the dust about into the eyes of other people who wanted other odds and ends. In fact, resumed his parliamentary duties. In the meantime, Mrs. Sparsit kept unwinking watch and ward. Separated from her staircase, all the week, by the length of iron road dividing Coketown from the country house, she yet maintained her cat-like observation of Louisa, through her husband, through her brother, through James Harthouse, through the outsides of letters and packets, through everything animate and inanimate that at any time went near the stairs. "Your foot on the last step, my lady," said Mrs. Sparsit, apostrophizing the descending figure with the aid of her threatening mitten, "and all your art shall never blind me." Apostrophe, art or nature though, the original stock of Louisa's character, or the graft of circumstances upon it, her curious reserve did baffle, while it stimulated, one as sagacious as Mrs. Sparsit. There were times when Mr. James Harthouse was not sure of her. There were times when he could not read the face he had studied so long, and when this lonely girl was a greater mystery to him than any woman of the world with a ring of satellites to help her. So the time went on, until it happened that Mr. Bounderby was called away from home by business which required his presence elsewhere, for 3 or 4 days. It was on a Friday that he intimated this to Mrs. Sparsit at the bank, adding, "But he will go down tomorrow, ma'am, all the same. He will go down, just as if I was there. It will make no difference to you." Apostrophe, pray, sir, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Sparsit, reproachfully, "let me beg you not to say that. Your absence will make a vast difference to me, sir, as I think you very well know." Apostrophe, "Well, ma'am, then you must get on in my absence as well as you can," apostrophe, said Mr. Bounderby, not displeased. Apostrophe, "Mr. Bounderby," apostrophe, retorted Mrs. Sparsit, "your will is to me a law, sir. Otherwise, it might be my inclination to dispute your kind commands, not feeling sure that it will be quite so agreeable to Miss Gradgrind to receive me as it ever is to your own munificent hospitality. But you shall say no more, sir. I will go upon your invitation." Apostrophe, "Why, when I invite you to my house, ma'am," apostrophe, said Bounderby, opening his eyes, "I should hope you want no other invitation." Apostrophe, "No, indeed, sir," apostrophe, returned Mrs. Sparsit, "I should hope not." "Say no more, sir." "I would, sir, I could see you gay again." Apostrophe, "What do you mean, ma'am?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, blustered Bounderby. "Sir," apostrophe, rejoined Mrs. Sparsit, "there was wont to be an elasticity in you which I sadly miss." "Be buoyant, sir," apostrophe, Mr. Bounderby, under the influence of this difficult adjuration, backed up by her compassionate eye, could only scratch his head in a feeble and ridiculous manner, and afterwards assert himself at a distance, by being heard to bully the small fry of business all the morning. "Bitzer," apostrophe, said Mrs. Sparsit that afternoon, when her patron was gone on his journey, and the bank was closing, "present my compliments to young Mr. Thomas, and ask him if he would step up and partake of a lamb chop and walnut ketchup, with a glass of India ale?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, young Mr. Thomas being usually ready for anything in that way, returned a gracious answer, and followed on its heels. Apostrophe, Mr. Thomas, apostrophe, said Mrs. Sparsit, "these plain viands being on table, I thought you might be tempted." Apostrophe, "thank ye, Mrs. Sparsit," apostrophe, said the whelp, and gloomily fell to. "How is Mr. Harthouse, Mr. Tom?" apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mrs. Sparsit. "Oh, he's all right," apostrophe, said Tom. "Where may he be at present?" Mrs. Sparsit asked in a light conversational manner, after mentally devoting the whelp to the Furies for being so uncommunicative. He is shooting in Yorkshire, said Tom. Sent Lou a basket half as big as a church, yesterday. The kind of gentleman, now, said Mrs. Sparsit, sweetly, whom one might wager to be a good shot. Said Tom. He had long been a down-looking young fellow, but this characteristic had so increased of late, that he never raised his eyes to any face for 3 seconds together. Mrs. Sparsit consequently had ample means of watching his looks, if she were so inclined. Mr. Harthouse is a great favorite of mine, said Mrs. Sparsit, as indeed he is of most people. May we expect to see him again shortly, Mr. Tom? Why, I expect to see him tomorrow, returned the whelp. Good news. Cried Mrs. Sparsit, blandly. I have got an appointment with him to meet him in the evening at the station here, said Tom, and I am going to dine with him afterwards, I believe. He is not coming down to the country house for a week or so, being due somewhere else. At least, he says so, but I shouldn't wonder if he was to stop here over Sunday and stray that way. Which reminds me. Said Mrs. Sparsit. Would you remember a message to your sister, Mr. Tom, if I was to charge you with one? Well, I'll try, returned the reluctant whelp, if it isn't a long un. It is merely my respectful compliments, said Mrs. Sparsit, and I fear I may not trouble her with my society this week, being still a little nervous, and better perhaps by my poor self. If that's all, observed Tom, it wouldn't much matter, even if I was to forget it, for Lou's not likely to think of you, unless she sees you. Having paid for his entertainment with this agreeable compliment, he relapsed into a hangdog silence until there was no more India ale left, when he said, "Well, Mrs. Sparsit, I must be off." And went off. Next day, Saturday, Mrs. Sparsit sat at her window all day long looking at the customers coming in and out, watching the postman, keeping an eye on the general traffic of the street, revolving many things in her mind, but, above all, keeping her attention on her staircase. The evening come, she put on her bonnet and shawl, and went quietly out. Having her reasons for hovering in a furtive way about the station by which a passenger would arrive from Yorkshire, and for preferring to peep into it round pillars and corners, and out of ladies' waiting room windows, to appearing in its precincts openly. Tom was in attendance, and loitered about until the expected train came in. It brought no Mr. Harthouse. Tom waited until the crowd had dispersed, and the bustle was over, and then referred to a posted list of trains, and took counsel with porters. That done, he strolled away idly, stopping in the street and looking up it and down it, and lifting his hat off and putting it on again, and yawning and stretching himself, and exhibiting all the symptoms of mortal weariness, to be expected in one who had still to wait until the next train should come in, an hour and 40 minutes hence. This is a device to keep him out of the way, said Mrs. Sparsit, starting from the dull office window, whence she had watched him last. Harthouse is with his sister now. It was the conception of an inspired moment, and she shot off with her utmost swiftness to work it out. The station for the country house was at the opposite end of the town. The time was short, the road not easy, but she was so quick in pouncing on a disengaged coach, so quick in darting out of it, producing her money, seizing her ticket, and diving into the train, that she was borne along the arches spanning the land of coal pits past and present, as if she had been caught up in a cloud and whirled away. All the journey, immovable in the air, though never left behind, plain to the dark eyes of her mind, as the electric wires which ruled a colossal strip of music paper out of the evening sky were plain to the dark eyes of her body. Mrs. Sparsit saw her staircase, with the figure coming down, very near the bottom now, upon the brink of the abyss. An overcast September evening, just at nightfall, saw beneath its drooping eyelids Mrs. Sparsit glide out of her carriage, pass down the wooden steps of the little station into a stony road, cross it into a green lane, and become hidden in a summer growth of leaves and branches. One or two late birds sleepily chirping in their nests, and a bat heavily crossing and recrossing her, and the reek of her own tread in the thick dust, that felt like velvet, were all Mrs. Sparsit heard or saw until she very softly closed a gate. She went up to the house, keeping within the shrubbery, and went round it, peeping between the leaves at the lower windows. Most of them were open, as they usually were in such warm weather, but there were no lights yet, and all was silent. She tried the garden with no better effect. She thought of the wood, and stole towards it, heedless of long grass and briers, of worms, snails, and slugs, and all the creeping things that be. With her dark eyes and her hook nose warily in advance of her, Mrs. Sparsit softly crushed her way through the thick undergrowth, so intent upon her object, that she probably would have done no less, if the wood had been a wood of adders. Hark! The smaller birds might have tumbled out of their nests, fascinated by the glittering of Mrs. Sparsit's eyes in the gloom, as she stopped and listened. Low voices close at hand. His voice and hers. The appointment was a device, to keep the brother away. There they were yonder, by the felled tree. Bending low among the dewy grass, Mrs. Sparsit advanced closer to them. She drew herself up, and stood behind a tree, like Robinson Crusoe in his ambuscade against the savages, so near to them that at a spring, and that no great one, she could have touched them both. He was there secretly, and had not shown himself at the house. He had come on horseback, and must have passed through the neighboring fields, for his horse was tied to the meadow side of the fence, within a few paces. "My dearest love," apostrophe said he, "what could I do? Knowing you were alone, was it possible that I could stay away? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you may hang your head, to make yourself the more attractive. I don't know what they see in you, when you hold it up," apostrophe thought Mrs. Sparsit, "but you little think, my dearest love, whose eyes are on you." Apostrophe, apostrophe, that she hung her head, was certain. She urged him to go away, she commanded him to go away, but she neither turned her face to him, nor raised it. Yet it was remarkable, that she sat as still as ever the amiable woman in ambuscade had seen her sit, at any period in her life. Her hands rested in one another, like the hands of a statue, and even her manner of speaking was not hurried. "My dear child," apostrophe said Harthouse. Mrs. Sparsit saw with delight that his arm embraced her. "Will you not bear with my society for a little while?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "not here." Apostrophe, "where, Louia?" "Not here." Apostrophe, "but we have so little time to make so much of, and I have come so far, and am altogether so devoted and distracted. There never was a slave at once so devoted and ill-used by his mistress. To look for your sunny welcome, that has warmed me into life, and to be received in your frozen manner, is heart-rending. Apostrophe, am I to say again, that I must be left to myself here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, but we must meet, my dear Louia. Where shall we meet?" Apostrophe, they both started. The listener started, guiltily too, for she thought there was another listener among the trees. It was only rain, beginning to fall fast, in heavy drops. "Shall I ride up to the house a few minutes hence, innocently supposing that its master is at home, and will be charmed to receive me?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "no." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "your cruel commands are implicitly to be obeyed, though I am the most unfortunate fellow in the world, I believe, to have been insensible to all other women, and to have fallen prostrate at last under the foot of the most beautiful, and the most engaging, and the most imperious. My dearest Luia, I cannot go myself, or let you go, in this hard abuse of your power. Apostrophe, Mrs. Sparsit saw him detain her with his encircling arm, and heard him then and there, within her, Mrs. Sparsit's, greedy hearing, tell her how he loved her, and how she was the stake for which he ardently desired to play away all that he had in life. The objects he had lately pursued, turned worthless beside her, such success as was almost in his grasp, he flung away from him like the dirt it was, compared with her. Its pursuit, nevertheless, if it kept him near her, or its renunciation, if it took him from her, or flight if she shared it, or secrecy if she commanded it, or any fate, or every fate, all was alike to him, so that she was true to him, the man who had seen how cast away she was, whom she had inspired at their first meeting with an admiration, an interest, of which he had thought himself incapable, whom she had received into her confidence, who was devoted to her and adored her. All this, and more, in his hurry, and in hers, in the whirl of her own gratified malice, in the dread of being discovered, in the rapidly increasing noise of heavy rain among the leaves, and a thunderstorm rolling up Mrs. Sparsit received into her mind, set off with such an unavoidable halo of confusion and indistinctness, that when at length he climbed the fence, and led his horse away, she was not sure where they were to meet, or when, except that they had said it was to be that night. But one of them yet remained in the darkness before her, and while she tracked that one she must be right. Oh, my dearest love, apostrophe thought Mrs. Sparsit, you little think how well attended you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Sparsit saw her out of the wood, and saw her enter the house. What to do next? It rained now, in a sheet of water. Mrs. Sparsit's white stockings were of many colors, green. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.